I need just a block note. Is it possible? Anyone you have here?
Nope.
No.
No. No.
Thank you.
You're welcome. There's a recording and there's a transcript. And you'll remember more. Mona, you're a teacher. I was a teacher. And we've all been students. And you actually do retain more by actually just listening and engaging. I totally get your point. But, you know, there's something old-fashioned called a pen and pencil. And I find them amazing. Every once in a while, I just look around. I find those old tools, and they become friends. They're really, really cool. So, you. Artek, you know better. Good gosh, you're an alumni. I know. Any other questions? No? Gosh, I'm doing a really good job. I'll pat myself on the back. All right, we're going to give this another minute, and then Patrick will... Oh, the other thing I forgot to mention yesterday, too, from a food perspective, being a foodie if I can. Before you leave today, and there's coffee and tea in the back, but before you leave today, don't leave without some fruit or granola bars or something, you know, so get things in your pockets because you never know when a session lasts for a long time and you need to grab a little something. So, empty out my platters before you leave today.
For the purposes of the transcript, this is Tuesday, July 16th, 7:30 a.m., Fellowship Morning Meeting, Hall 4AB, Fellowship Morning Meeting, July 16th, and we'll be getting underway shortly.
And with that, I'll introduce our security team to get us officially started this morning. Patrick and Jeff, I'll let you take the show. Let me just say that these folks are either alumni who know the basics or the newcomers who got the basics from you and Rick. So the kind of cool thing is just the work that you do and some of the interesting things that you guys have come up against, things that you've had to solve, things like that. That would be kind of fun for the group. Thank you.
Yeah, so I'm Patrick Jones, and this is Jeff Moss. We also have Rick Lamb from the team, so Rick will come up too. All of us have been in the space for a long time, and we've had, I know Rick and I have both had a variety of roles at ICANN, and Jeff comes from a diverse background as well. So we're certainly able to talk about the things that we see in security, but we're also able to talk about the unique experiences that we've had and what brought us here. I know from my perspective, I've had a variety of roles, and I, while I'm part of the security team, I didn't start out that way. When I came to ICANN in 2006, I had been active in the from a legal perspective in the domain name space for 6 years before that, doing trademark work and anti-cyber squatting cases. And I was very lucky to find the space, and to when I started, I was doing registry liaison function. So I got to work with registries and registrars and see that side of the community. And fortunately, there was a time when ICANN was much smaller and it was easier to shift roles, and I found the right spot for me as part of the security team, and that's allowed I know from my perspective, to see a diverse side of the community where we were active in training and talking to people and meeting different groups. So that's something that I know that all of our team really enjoys doing, is going out there and explaining what we do, helping solve problems, connect people together. And we really look at ourselves as a bridge between the different communities and a way to help connect people when they see either attacks or there's some kind of malware or some issue that a particular community is having trouble trying to solve or identify who the right party is within the community. And in many cases, we're a conduit to connect them to the right place. And I know that's something that we enjoy. So I'm going to turn it over to Rick and then Jeff. And then you guys, and then feel free to ask us questions, because I think that's really where, well, we could talk a lot, but I think maybe you have questions about the types of things that we see, and have it be more of a conversation.
Well, I'm Rick Lamb. My perspective is very much one of a beneficiary, you know, of the internet and the multi-stakeholder process and model, and I used to. I had a couple startups. I'm really, really just an engineer, but I had a couple of startups that were successful, and I felt felt I needed to pay back. And but that's not why I came to ICANN. So no, I worked at the U.S. State Department for a short time. So if you could imagine a technical person in foreign affairs, yeah, it was that bad. So I couldn't handle it. But it has taken me. I've been there since 2007. It's taken me since then to fully appreciate the subtlety of how we work. I mean, particularly as a businessman and as techie, you know, I just care about results. You know, what can I do to make this work or make money from something? And but by ICANN not being a heavy-handed regulatory authority that it forms its policies from consensus and from the community, full buy-in into something. It gives you so much more, the result is so much more useful. And it's one of those things, you know, maybe I'm just slow, but it just took me a while, you know, to really see that the difference between, you know, a hard regulation on something as opposed to something where everyone's come along. And, you know, everyone's tired of hearing this, but, you know, DNSSEC is one of the things that I was charged with at ICANN. I just was looking for a random job, and they said, you've got this DNSSEC thing needs to be done. So I became the DNSSEC guy over time, and that was a true example of, you know, the bottom-up multi-stakeholder model. And I'm going to emphasize bottom-up because that's really my my thing as an engineer, to know that people like us are the ones that actually can make things happen. So we needed to come up with one a public key infrastructure, and we needed to come up with one kind of structure and one key, basically, that people could use to validate DNS requests. DNSSEC is basically secured, you know, securing DNS. And my experience at the Foreign Affairs Office in the U.S. was, no way, Jose, that's not going to happen. That is just not going to, you know, there's no way that any one country is going to be beholden to any others because they're all independent. So, but we're all engineers. We're friends. We form networks. And so at least in the engineering community, we said, let's take 21 people from around the world that have that are experts, that are recognized experts, technical experts in their field, and let's split control of this key across 21 people. And so by doing that, it worked. I mean, no one could argue that we weren't fully distributing the responsibility of this thing among people. And to this day, I'm just, you know, I'll admit I'm a bit proud of that, you know, because it worked. You know, there's nothing like that. They tried doing something like that with e-passports, and I think the final solution they do for the passports, the chips and the passports, is they have some sort of cross-certification. You know, everyone has their own certificates. Each country has its own certificates, and they share across as opposed to just using one. So to check an e-passport, they need to actually go through a much more complicated process. Anyway, make a long story short. And as Patrick said, what I've seen here, I do a lot of trainings, is that it's not really the training, it's the relationships that are made. So, you know, when I talk to fellows, I always think, you know, boy, what a lucky bunch of people. I mean, you guys have spent, you're going to spend this week together, and you're going to form these relationships. So now when you need something, we're going to be helpless because you could hit us from all sides. and so you form actually a very strong constituency of sorts. And I probably, that probably has a very specific term, and I probably can't use that in an ICANN sense. But, you know, it's important to have fun. Try to get plenty of sleep. But it's important to, you know, talk to people as much as possible. Just, if you've got a question, just ask it. You know, no one's, there is no dumb question in this space. There's so many people I know that have made it pretty far along, not in this room, but have made it pretty far along and still don't really understand how the DNS works. Probably something you ought to, you know, don't be afraid to ask those questions now. Anyway, with that, anytime you catch me, just happy to talk to you. Thanks.
Hi, good morning, and I'm Jeff Moss. I'm the Chief Security Officer for ICANN, and I have the pleasure of working with these two guys, which is a pleasure compared to some of the other people I've had to work with in my past. It's actually really nice. You know, you guys were talking a little bit about the multi-stakeholder model. From my perspective, it's really nice working for a company where we don't sell a product. You know, it's about a service to the community, and so it's not about ship dates and product margins and cutting people off to, you know, to get that next raise because you sold extra 10 widgets. And so it really allows you to focus on the more important things. And like you were saying, in this community, it's relationships and it's getting things done and meeting expectations and helping people out. And that's pretty rewarding. So ICANN is a really rewarding group to function, to operate in, to make, you know, call your home. And so when we talk about the security team, we're really talking about sort of two different things. One is internally to ICANN, stuff you probably don't think much about, but the internal operations at ICANN. So this would be our own IT systems. Let's say we're working on a new thing called the TMCH. You want to have some sort of security audit of that. You want to make sure that the developers have thought about security concerns. So internal processes and systems. We want to make sure that bad guys can't steal all the money out of accounting, those kinds of things. And then we have the external side of things that you probably are most familiar with us, and that's capacity building and training and working with IETF or ISOC or, you know, the Commonwealth Cybercrime Initiative or the Anti-Phishing Working Group or the Messaging Anti-Abuse Working Group. So we participate in a lot of different forums, Interpol, and try to be a voice of perspective of ICANN's perspective. And so that's where we're viewed as sort of or collaborating with others. We also spend a fair bit of time understanding where we're all going, where ICANN is going, and trying to get ahead of it. So, for example, we're involved in a lot of work with our SOs and ACs, supporting organizations and advisories. So, for example, we have two big reports coming out soon that we are helping participate in on the dotless domains and internal name collisions. And so that's an example where all the different groups inside ICANN pull together to answer questions, and the security team has been providing the security perspective. And so that's really, it's really cool to see your work actually pop out somewhere and be useful to the overall community. So, like I said, you get a really good sense of a little bit of you is in what everybody on the planet's using. So that's really cool. And we're happy to answer any questions you may have. So I'm just going to keep it short.
Okay, on the record, my name is Paul Mushane. I'm an ICANN fellow from Kenya. I just want to know from you, in your experience, what have been some of the most serious threats that you've come across on the route, and which are the most recent? Maybe you could like to share.
The most spectacular, most well-reported was over more than a year ago, was this hacking collective called Anonymous was threatening to, quote-unquote, take down the root and disrupt the internet service for everybody for a day. And this is maybe about a year and a half ago. And they were going to do it with a giant botnet, and they were going to use reflective amplification attacks to attack the root servers. And then once the roots go down, there's the caching infrastructure that will last maybe for a day or two. And then if you take down the root, it could disrupt things for maybe a day. They never happen. You might have read all the stories about the attack coming up, but you never read any stories about the attack being successful. But it was a valid threat, and the attack methodology is valid. It's just they didn't get around to doing it. And it turned out at about that same time, there was this big anonymous attack against Syria. So everybody decided that attacking Syria was more sexy than attacking the root, and everybody ran off to attack Syria, and they left us alone. So that was good. So we periodically see people making sounds like they're going to attack the root for a protest, and so it's something we monitor, we pay attention to. We're constantly trying to expand the size of LROOT, and we're trying to encourage other root operators to expand their footprint, because one of the only defenses to these kinds of attacks is to scale and to get larger. And even if nobody grew the root at all, just the very nature of more users coming online, more use of DNSSEC, more mobile devices, and optimized prefetching of DNS names, the queries are going up anyway just by themselves. So you would have to sort of add capacity no matter what, just to stay current. But to fend off threats, the only real defense is just to scale. So,
just to add to that, the most recent type of attack that we're seeing is attacks on the web interface for ccTLDs or registrars. Yesterday there was the CC Tech Day, and there was a really interesting presentation from someone from Google who was showing the examples over the last 2 or 3 years of a number of country code operators and registrars that have had hackings on their web interfaces. And so this is that is the type of practical information that is often provided at these meetings that would probably be of interest to you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Patricia Sangor from Senegal. I have a question regarding the capacity building projects you're having now presently in Africa. Can you tell us more about it? Thank you.
So I'll start and then turn it over to Rick. So ICANN has been working with partners throughout the world with the regional TLD organizations and others, like the ISOC and the Network Startup Resource Center, for about 10 years. And that composes a number of different types of training. Some of it is very specialized to implementing DNSSEC, which is what Rick has done this year in a number of countries. But we've also done this at ICANN meetings and or outside of the meeting space to do basic DNS awareness for law enforcement, for CCTLD operators, and for other for educators. And we've also had a series of trainings that involve attack and contingency response. So how to recognize an attack, basic DNS awareness for operators, and then things that are more specialized of secure registry operations course. So Rick, I don't know if you want to talk about the DNSSEC training we do.
I mean, I don't have too much to add other than, you know, a lot of the training is hands-on as well. So we'll do, you know, everything from a combination of some awareness stuff for the execs, you know, and then we'll actually do the hands-on, which I think is the most useful part, where people actually do get some DNS basics, do some, you know, searches and stuff, and actually sign, deploy DNSSEC and do things like that, all the way to the point where if there's a particular CCTLD that needs some closer help, we're actually happy to spend some time doing that as well.
Hello. For the record, I'm Adrian Quesada Rodriguez from Costa Rica. Well, I'm a lawyer, but the whole cybersecurity and these issues really interest me. So I was wondering, could you tell us three examples of issues that your specific constituency is currently analyzing, and how a non-techie prospective member could help the constituency in dealing with these issues?
So Jeff and I can both talk about this because we have legal backgrounds, although Jeff is definitely technical, and I didn't start out as technical. Being involved in this environment, you learn a lot just from exposure to the amazing people that are in this space. You know, having that legal perspective, it's not a detriment, and it's one that you can really, I think that it is useful, but I mean, Jeff, you should really talk more.
Well, the legal side kind of tends to move you toward policy, and that's an area I think that's really growing, unfortunately. But it seems like, I don't know how many people in this room, but 5 years ago, did it seem like your governments even paid attention or cared about this area? And how is it now? And how do you think it'll be in 5 years? And in the United States, it seems like over the last 3 or 4 years, the government's really woken up to this. So you're spending a lot of time talking to a lot of business groups and, you know, different agencies within the government, trying to explain to them why this is important or why this is not important, why this is not really a threat, why it's, you know, whatever it is. And so your legal background will kind of help you determine what's important and what's not, where to spend your energy. And while you might not be coding up the latest XML Whois interchange interface, you know, you might have to explain that and explain why that's important or not important for your business, for your country, for whatever. So I think it's not a detriment, it's a strength, because the technical people are going to start having to rely on the sort of the policy people at some point. We call that the layer 8 on the ISO model, right, the politics level. And that layer is only going to be getting more and more important.
Good morning, I'm Katie Ann Davis, fellow from Jamaica. My questions, I have two questions, they're strategic in nature. What role will ICANN play in terms of security over the next 5 years, given the recent threats in cybersecurity? And with regard to the new GTLD program, what are some of the probable threats to security that may arise?
I want to let Rick talk about the DNSSEC threats. I think just I'm not going to put too many words in his mouth, but when you deploy DNSSEC broadly, you get some security benefits, but you have to also understand there's a trade-off there where we're making the system more brittle, not as flexible, but in return we're getting security. And so this is a conscious decision trade-off that engineers have made. Would you say that's accurate?
Absolutely. And it's in a slightly more abstract sense, though, I think what ICANN brings to the table is that capacity building. Okay, we don't control the internet. I mean, so many people say that, but no, we don't control the internet. All we really can do is use our bully pulpit, if you will, our position to try to help policymakers and decision makers understand. And I think, yes, absolutely, I'm a geek. It's the security thing that I'm going to push, and that's what I do. That's what I love. But as far as in the next 5 years, how ICANN really helps this ecosystem deal with some of the cybersecurity threats, it's people like Jeff, it's people like Patrick here that understand both sides, you know, the decision makers and the actual problems, and more those decision makers and policymakers are coming to ICANN, which I think shows that we've been successful.
So to answer the first part of your question about the five-year issue, I don't know how many of you were in the strategic planning session yesterday, but that's exactly a question that we're asking of all of you and all the rest of the community right now. And so if you have ideas, there's a way to present those so that those get picked up and considered. I mean, there's a variety of things that we're seeing. And we have a session on Wednesday morning to talk about some of to provide an update to the community of the security, stability, and resiliency issues. So it's 9 to 10:30 Wednesday morning, and you're all welcome to come to that session.
My name is Usman Dauda, a new participant from Nigeria. What I observe for the past few days that I've been here is the fact that ICANN tries to make things easy for everybody. It is also a very harmonious and lucrative place. However, I also observe that there are some people that want to disrupt the efforts of ICANN by making it a bit difficult for people to communicate or destroy the means of communication. My question is, how does ICANN try to stop such tendencies? Then, secondly, in view of these challenges, what effort is ICANN making to engage the various governments to partner with it in this regard? Thank you.
So, from a government perspective, we have a global stakeholder engagement team, and we have vice presidents in the regions. We announced that there's a hub offices that are opening so that we get closer to the community. So we now have a office in Istanbul that's opening very soon, an office in Singapore. And there'll be regional vice presidents in those locations. We have those people are working closely with their counterparts in the regions, and governments are a particular focus to make sure that that we're welcoming and listening to the concerns that they have. Yeah, and also we see there are more representatives from countries and governments coming to ICANN to participate in the GAC. Mona is a good example. I don't know if there are other GAC representatives that are part of the fellowship group, but it's great to see because governments really do have a way to participate.
Yeah, we actually have 17 fellows that sit on the GAC, and we have Serena, who's back here with us, and Nelly, who both have experience on the GAC. So we have very good representation, and the ladies back there would be happy to talk with you as well at the ICANN booth, where you've become very familiar, so I'm happy that you're really using it as well. We have a remote question I'm going to go to next.
This question is from Philip Johnson, ASOC, Liberia, ALS. And he says, good morning. What are the procedures or criterials for an ASL to engage ICANN in order to carry out an impact project within their community, for instance? An ASL within its community wants to carry out a cybersecurity project or just want to create an awareness about ICANN, but do not have the funds and would like to receive assistance from ICANN, what procedures should such an ALS take to get funding to carry such a project?
So one way is, you know, looking at the materials that we provide. So for this year, we published our security framework in the six UN languages plus Portuguese. And we also provide a lot of understandable writings about security issues. If there's something else that you know, you're looking for, whether it's training materials or just documents to use to explain for your ALS, then perhaps email us directly and we can look further and see what might already be developed that can be shared.
And when Patrick says that again for the newcomer, it is first.lastname@icann.org. You can find everyone on the ICANN homepage under About Us and then find staff. We can't hide. So you can find our picture and our name, and it is first.lastname@icann.org. So.
But on the funding question, that's one I'm not sure. I mean, other than applying for the fellowship program, I mean, there aren't other I mean, as far as I know right now, we don't have a grant system for projects. So perhaps that's something that ALS would need to talk to its probably within the at-large advisory committee and request some, or you know, look to see what opportunities are within the at-large space. But and this goes to everyone. You're not limited to one particular you know, silo or type of group to engage with ICANN. You can always come to our team directly, and we try to route you to the right entities. But there's, I mean, feel free to look to see what some of the other groups are, and, you know, if you don't know something, ask.
And Patrick, you just alluded to something that put the light bulb off in the early morning for me. There is special request funding through the supporting organizations and advisory committees into the ICANN finance team. And so it would be for FY15 now, since the FY14 budget will be approved this week by the ICANN board. But this coming year, we'll be working with the SOs and the ACs, including at large, where anyone can put forth a framework for a budget request for funding that they feel ICANN currently is not providing. But it has to come in through the supporting organization and the advisory committee. It cannot come in independently from an individual. So you do have to belong to a community group in ICANN in order to put this special budget request. And normally the cap is between $500,000 and $800,000. Dollars for the money that we spend on behalf of the community for the things that they want. Now, our next speaker is here, and again, as I always say, in deference to the busy schedules that everybody holds, I do want to wrap this up. This is always engaging. We always come to the situation where I get the security team around the table and we could sit and talk with them forever. Patrick cannot promise anything on behalf of the team because their schedules are very full. If in any way they can find some more time, he is always very generous and lets me know if more time can be had, and then I see if we can have a room and get back together. But I make no commitment on that part, but we do recognize this is an incredibly engaging conversation. And if there's any other questions for security, Patrick?
No, I just use this as an opportunity again to say if you want to ask more questions of us or hear what some of the things that we're working on, the Wednesday session, you're open, and it's going to be in the big room in Hall 6. There's lots of space for everybody here to go to that session, and so we really welcome and hope to see you there.
Perfect. Thank you guys so very much.
We're also in the middle of revamping our webpage for security at ICANN, so it's icann.org/security. And so we'd love to have your feedback. If you go to that page and you say, hey, how come there's no article on this or there's no link to this library. Just let us know, because we're trying to reinvent the page for security and be more useful to everyone.
It's
so
not done yet.
Yeah, it's not up yet?
No. I mean, it's there. It's there, but we're in the process of all the great work that has to get posted for this meeting. It's sort of in the publishing queue for after Durban, but very soon, lots of information there.
So afterward, when you get back home a week from now, right?
Yeah.
And you want to engage again, just check out the page and let us know if you find anything you think we should improve. It'd just be useful to get your feedback. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. While Joette has a Mutual Admiration Society back here, my roommate Joette has arrived. The NOMCOM, the Nominating Committee for ICANN, is an essential part of ICANN that we used to, as ICANN, kind of keep over kind of quietly to the side a bit. You can find the Nominating Committee on the multi-stakeholder model. I have to say this, in the last couple years, from my perspective, 7 years at ICANN, it's become a much more open and familiar part of ICANN, which is so great. And so the Nominating Committee continues to come to the fellowship morning meetings in order for you to better understand their purpose within the ICANN multi-stakeholder structure, and then what you, no matter what level you're coming in, can do to help bring more individuals into the ICANN structure. So with that, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for having me here. My name is Yrjö Länsipuro, and I'm the chair of the 2013 Nominating Committee. I come from Finland. I'm the president of ISOC Finland, which is one of the at-large structures and belongs to URAL. Nominating committee, actually the name needs a little bit explanation, because many associations and organizations have nominating committees whose task is to nominate candidates for leadership positions. And then the final decision is taken by annual general meeting or board of some sort. In our case, the nominating committee not only nominates but also selects. That is to say, when we select people to leadership position, that's it, and the choice is made. Nominating committee is. Since ICANN has no shareholders and it has no members, it means that actually to have some sort of democracy in this in the selection of the leadership, the nominating committee tries to fulfill that role, because it's composed of representatives of all constituencies in this multi-stakeholder world in ICANN. That is to say, all SOs, all supporting organizations, ALAC, have voting members in the nominating committee. There are two non-voting members who come from SSAC and RSSAC, and then the chair. The chair-elect, who will be the chair next year, and associate chair, and these last three are, of course, also non-voting. So that's what we are, and what we do is that we, the nominating committee, selects 8 members of the board, 3 members of GNSO, 3 of CCNSO, and 5 to ALEC. This year, our task is to select 3 board members, the 2 GNSO, 1 CCNSO, plus 1 more to replace one who resigned, and 3 ALEC, who should come from Africa, Asia Pacific, and Latin America. How we do this? There is the work of the nominating committee starts, like in our case, it started in Toronto with a kickoff meeting, and the first task is what we call outreach and recruitment. That is to say, the first task is to drum up as many good candidates as possible, because if without a good candidate base, whatever we do, we can't produce candidates from thin air, and that's so that is the first and a very important step. This year we were quite successful in the sense that there were a record number of candidates, 111, one withdraw, but still 110 is the same number as they were in 2003. So that I'm very happy that there is still interest in serving in volunteer positions of ICANN. This year, we also used the services of a recruitment, outside recruitment firm, to supplement what otherwise we were getting. But I must say that this is not really this is not a headhunting work as they do otherwise, because to serve in these positions of ICANN is very different from just being a CEO or board member at some place where you can expect a lot of money, first of all, for those services, and where the company or corporation is also very different from ICANN. There's one word that we have used, and actually that's the word that Fadi was using, and that's passion. I mean, to serve in these positions with no or rather low level of compensation, what you need is really passion for the Internet, for the ICANN, and for the multi-stakeholder model that we have and try to develop. So when we had the candidates, 110 all told, by the deadline, which was extended to May 15, then our second phase of work starts. That is to say, we start evaluating the candidates, polling on a wiki page, on what they, what the members think of them, and finally we come down from that big number to manageable numbers, which then are given even closer scrutiny. In the case of board candidates, a certain number of them are also interviewed by a German headhunting firm, the same firm what we used for recruitment, so that we can, the committee members get also a sort of professional assessment of the qualities of the candidates. What we look for are people who, when we talk about the board members, we look for people who have experience of that sort of work that the board performs, not necessarily in a commercial surrounding, in commercial surroundings, not necessarily corporations. It could be universities, it could be government service, but anyway, people who already have shown but they can be responsible for that level of money resources that I can, I mean, 160 million annual budget, whatever, and also managing the people, and last but not least, who are at home in the world, so to say, that the, I mean, basically, like ICANN has developed and is developed into an international organization. People need to have that sort of experience. We also look for people who have multi-stakeholder experience, have been active in multi-stakeholder surroundings, and know what bottom-up policy development is. So there's lists of good qualities. We get ideas of for these criteria, of course, from the board, from the board governance committee, but also from the community, and that's why at meetings, especially like we did in Toronto and Beijing, we're meeting with the various constituencies and get their thinking on what kind of people should serve on the board and on the GNSO, CCNSO, and ALAC as NOMCOM appointees. Because, of course, everywhere in the ICANN organization, you have people who have been selected by the constituencies, and the NOMCOM appointees are supposed to balance. They are supposed to be neutral in the sense that they don't have any sort of interests in this or that part of these constituencies. This year, I think that there's been progress in the sense that ICANN nominating committee has, the NOMCOM traditionally has been seen as a black box, secretive, just, you know, nobody knows where they meet and nobody knows what they do, but somehow the white smoke comes out and then, you know, habemus papam, we have the Pope. We have tried to change that. And of course, there have been, like ATRT 1 review, the accountability and transparency review that was made a couple of years ago. The transparency of NOMCOM was one of the things that they wanted to see more. Now, how can you solve this conflict? Because if anything, we have to be, our working has to be confidential. We are not, you know, just we are not juggling the names of the candidates in public. We are absolutely confidential about them. But at the same time, it's possible to open the process so that when we first time met in Toronto, we said, okay, the process is open, but data is secret. Data meaning, of course, the names. And that's, I think that we've been quite successful in that we have had the first open NOMCOM meetings at the ICANN meetings ever in Toronto and in Beijing. And even here yesterday, and the other thing is that we have been issuing progress reports, that is to say, a report card monthly issued by the committee. It's a sort of collective work, collectively drafted, but then representatives of the constituencies are responsible for relaying that report back to their groups, back to their constituencies. I've been talking too long, so...
I sit here and I've heard this before, but you're speaking, I have to just tell you, I'm just sitting here with a smile on my face because I said the same to Alyssa Cooper yesterday. You get the right person in a certain role and it becomes something everyone now wants to listen to. And I'm very serious. I want to compliment you. This presentation, to me, is engaging now. I mean, you want to find out more about the nominating committee, and you're right, for so long, it wasn't something, you know, some dry material, and we really didn't get it, you know? And it was, like you say, the black box and the white smoke, and you've just brought it to life here in 10 minutes. So, no, I don't think you're talking too long at all. I'm staring right at you, engaged, and I've heard this. So I think it's tremendous. I think it might be interesting to have Sarahnoosh Rafiq, from their perspective, kind of talk, because I think a lot of times from a newcomer or a fellowship perspective, you think, why are they coming to talk here to me? There is no way that I could fill this role, so let me just check out for the next 15 minutes and, you know, think of my daily schedule. But there's, you know, a huge reason that you're here with this resource. So I thought maybe Sarahnoosh, from your perspective as a fellow, could share a bit.
Thank you, Janice. Sarahnoosh Mardanyan from Armenia. Actually, you all know, we have talked about this, that I came to ALAK through fellowship program. This was the main path for coming to this world. So, and then I was nominated from ALAK to serve in NOMCOM. So I just want to make sure for all of you that this is possible for any of us. So, coming and serving in nomination committee is some kind of knowing another world of ICANN, which was really, I am serving there 2 years, and there was impressive difference between the first year serving and the second year. Yeah, our chair told you that there were several public meetings, which brought a completely new approach towards NOMCOM, and it's not just mere chance that this year we had a really huge number of applications, and it was really always a great pleasure for me when I saw the name who comes from fellowship program. So and it's growing. The number of those people is growing. So we can see that this program gave that information and gave that path to people to find themselves. So, just would like to say, to mention one more thing, that in 2010, we nomination committee, at that time I was not there, but nomination committee selected one to serve in CCNSO fellow, Sokol Nahiu, the guy from Albania who was a member of fellowship program. So, I mean, this is really the way how fellows can be involved and how they can move forward with their participation in ICANN. Related to nomination committee, just a couple of words about my experience. I started to know not only when you are coming from one constituency in nomination committee, you represent all. So you are not supposed to represent your constituency. And when we are selecting people, you start to think about from general ICANN perspective, not only from your constituency perspective. And that's very important, to forget about your representation and stick to one constituency and bring a new global approach to the table. And it's really hard work to some extent to find a good person out of hundreds of good persons there. So, I mean, they all are very experienced. They all are really very great. And we have about 60 people applied for board position, and out of that we have to select only 3. So you can imagine. And those, all 60, are exceptional professionals around the world with huge experience, many years experience in the world. So it's really difficult work, but we have monthly meetings, but after May 15, as mentioned, Chair, when our applications came in already, we are having weekly calls, weekly meetings, all together, discussing each and every person, discussing everything from different perspectives, because we don't want to lose the best candidate for those positions to serve the whole community. And we need to take responsibility for the selection itself. That's all?
No, I know you. You could go another hour. I know you very well. No, and that's terrific. And Rafika, I don't want to put you on the spot. If you'd like to say something, please, and I don't want to put you on the spot, if you'd like to.
We are two fellows in nomination committee, current nomination committee, so Rafik is the next one.
If you'd like to say a word, do, and I'm just going to fill in here and say, too, it's not just about am I the right person for the nominating committee coming in through a certain way, or am I the right person to be nominated for a position, but who do I know? You know, think about your network of people. Who do you know out there that would be a great representative? The members of our board who had no idea what ICANN was before they were rung up, I'm sure is tremendous. You know, and just like myself 7 years ago, I had to research ICANN when I was asked to interview. But they have these qualities and could bring to ICANN a site that we don't have. And so don't contain it to, like, again, check off, it couldn't be me now. We're asking you to open your mind and your network to who you do know, because we can't get diversity, global diversity. We can't get women taking leadership positions. We can't get young male entrepreneurs from Africa. We can't get those people unless you bring them to us. So who you know and your network is all important to us at ICANN to bring people into this community that have a new set of ears, a new set of eyes, and a different perspective. So never, and again, it's just like the fellowship application. There are times that you get turned down, I mean that in just not a very general sense, 3 or 4 times. It gets discouraging. People that come into the nominating, I'm sure, oh, well, I'm not the 3 out of the 60. With these kind of qualifications, I'd be happy to be the 60. And the fellowship program is the same way. Our applications are at such a level now that it's a very good thing. So be proud when you do get there. And in the nominating committee, I'm sure it's the same. You know, but think of your network. And that's what we're asking you to go back and do. Look at the work we're doing here. And then think of the network of people that you know and the impact that one individual you know may have. And you know, walk away with that.
Just one more thing to add. We will need, and we always need, your support in doing outreach. Because for the next year, after Buenos Aires, there will be an announcement for another year open positions. So think, as Janice said, think about yourselves, about your network, about people in your community who can serve in those leadership positions, and encourage them to apply. Subscribe to ICANN News Alerts, which sends all the time those information, and you'll be aware when the announcement is coming, when are the deadlines, and please think about making outreach, taking the word outside of ICANN and spread it in your local communities. Thank you.
Good morning. Carol Douglas from Trinidad and Tobago. Thank you very much. That was very interesting. And it seems to me that this is a process to get people engaged in ICANN, from what I'm understanding. My question is this open to everybody? I think it may have been addressed where people inside ICANN would automatically, in my humble opinion, have an advantage. So if you do nominate somebody, isn't it generally the case that that person would be from ICANN, already somewhat in ICANN, as opposed to, when you said outreach, people who may not have any knowledge or idea, even though they're working with related topics and subject matter, but is it the norm that you'd have somebody who is totally foreign to ICANN be nominated? And if so,
what is the term when you nominate somebody, not somebody is then selected? What is the term of that person's duty? And of course, I guess the natural question after that would be, is there a stipend or is it a contribution of love, you know, and you are asked to pay your way in some regard? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. It's a good question. Of course, in the requirements and even in the bylaws, talking about what kind of people should be on the board, one should be familiar with the internet and so on and so forth. But there have been good examples of people who have had rather limited knowledge of the workings of the DNS and how the whole thing is run. There have been people who are quick to learn and who have brought some other qualities to the board which are needed. And it's open for all, yes. The only exception is actually that a person cannot be on a government payroll. I mean, people who are government employees or civil servants, whatever, are not. They cannot serve on the board. And of course, there have been many examples of people who have been previously diplomats or whatever, and then have resigned those positions or retired and can be.
To the question of the stipends, just Carol had just a question: is it out of love, or is there any kind of a stipend provided to someone who has been nominated to be on the board or another position?
Yeah, sure, it is. I mean, it's a...
Actually, for this year, it's usually volunteer work, so they are not paid. Board members will have some compensation, some reimbursement for some of the activities, and they, again, will not be paid for this, but they are reimbursed for the travels, for those meetings. And just coming back to the question you said, ICANN needs new blood. So that's the good point and the best way to bring new blood. And as an example, last year, nomination committee selected one of the board members who were completely new to ICANN. And she just came into the floor, I mean, outside of ICANN world. So it helps also to have a look from outside, outsider who comes in and then brings that outsider view into this. So that's important.
Dan Jukic from Serbia. I'm working in a registry as a registry lawyer, and in our registry we had developed a process about corporate governance, and we had a lot of questions to answer and to develop the, how could I say, perfect bylaws, but we didn't succeed it. And we learned and read a lot of ICANN documents and process of electing the people for the positions, especially for the board. And we had a discussion, shall we implement some sort of nominating committee or electing committee. And our first doubt was how to select people for the nominating committee, who will elect them. And my question is, what is the process of electing people of the nominating committee in ICANN? Which part of the organization elect them?
Yeah, the people to the nominating committee are selected by the SOs and ALEC and these and SAC and RSSAC Open this abbreviation. What was it? So open call for who wants to be their representative, and then they follow the procedures of those SOs and ALAC, what the case may be. The chair is nominated, is appointed by the board, and so is now the chair-elect, who is a member of the nominating committee now, and then will be the chair next year. One more person, that is to say the associate chair, is picked by the chair, at his her discretion. So that's how it happens. And as I said, this is it's a sort of proto-democratic element in the system, because at least you have all constituent parts, all constituencies involved in this process. Now the problem is that this when the structure evolves, for instance, the structure of GNSO is sort of changing all the time, and how that is reflected in a nominating committee.
So AC and SOs, there are advisory committees and supporting organizations, those who compile different constituencies within ICANN, and each and every constituency has give the name of the people for nominating committee. So they send their representative. Some committees provide voting members, and some of them provide non-voting members, the observers, the experts, the supporters, and the followers of the whole situation. So these people are coming from different constituencies. They are assigned, nominated by all constituencies within ICANN, except besides GAC. GAC never sends a representative to nomination committee. That's their decision.
Yeah, there is a chair for the GAC. As far as I understand, there was a GAC representative to NOMCOM. That was, but then they and the reason is that that the feeling, at least the feeling of the majority in the GAC, is that they feel that they don't want to be involved in the selection of the leadership of a private organization.
And with that, I'm going to have to say thank you. I know there was another question, but again, in deference to our speakers and their schedule, especially today, I want to thank you all very much. I know that they're on the webpage, nominating committee. You can find a lot of this information. I'll make sure, because Joette and I are in constant communication, that any other information you need about the nominating committee, I will provide to you so that you can ask any other questions and send directly. So thank you all very, very much. And Bill, I'll let you come on up, and I have your flyers as well to hand out. Bill Drake is the current chair for the non-commercial users constituency, which is a constituency within the generic name supporting organization, the GNSO. And I will let Bill go into that just a little further. And also, Magley is with us, who is a fellow currently engaged with the NCUC, as several other fellows are. So, Bill, can I help you hand out anything? Or?
All right, good morning, everybody. My name is Bill Drake, and I teach at the University of Zurich in Switzerland, and I am the current chair of the Non-Commercial Users Constituency, NCUC. Do we have a web-connected computer that's projecting on here? Janice? Can we pull up ncuc.org? So just while that happens, so we actually have a new website that's going live today, which was built by our members. We are not an organization that has a lot of extensive staff support, so we pretty much do everything on our own, by and large, or most of the work. So our members got together and decided that it was time for a new webpage, and we're launching it today in a half hour. Right after this meeting, I go to our constituency day meeting, which is 3.5 hours, and I've passed around the agenda for that. In the event that anybody might be interested in what we're going to be talking about, I'll mention that later, as well as the agenda for a workshop we have coming up tomorrow. So, a little bit about NCUC. We were formed in 1999 and have since then been within the generic name supporting organization. The constituency that represents civil society individuals and organizations that are committed to, in particular, such issues as human rights, civil liberties, privacy, freedom of expression, development, and related types of topics. These are mentioned on the flyer, which has just been handed out. That's the GNSO site. Could somebody pull up our site, which is ncuc.org? We are a part of the GNSO, but we have our own website. So, as you probably know, the GNSO was restructured a few years back. We now have a bicameral house, two major parts. There's the contracted parties, the registries and the registrars, that each have a stakeholder group. And then there's the non-contracted house, which is the commercial stakeholder group, the business constituency, the intellectual property constituency, and the ISP constituency. And then the last part, the last quarter of this bicameral house, is the non-commercial stakeholder group, within which you have NCUC and also NPOC, the Not-for-Profit Operational Concerns constituency. So if you followed all that mapping, we are part of one quarter of the GNSO. We have about 300 members around the world. About two-thirds of our members are outside the United States, so we're actually one of the most international parts of ICANN. We have members in over 70 countries, and I believe we have about 80-something organizational members and 220-something like that individual members. So we are unique in the GNSO environment in that we are the only constituency that individuals can join and vote directly in. The GNSO, of course, as you know, coordinates the policymaking process for generic top-level domains. And so the GNSO stakeholder groups elect members to the GNSO Council. The Council votes on policy processes. We have the policy development process, the PDP. So what this means, in short, is that we are in kind of an interesting position. We are one of the very few civil society networks that, and I'm involved in a lot of civil society networks that participate in different global governance arrangements, whether it's the Internet Governance Forum or the OECD or others. We're one of the few civil society organizations that actually has direct votes on decision-making processes that result in actual outcomes, policies. So that puts us in a kind of an interesting position that we've it's very challenging, of course, because it means a lot of work. We mobilize people to come to the meetings, the face-to-face meetings that are held three times a year, but we also do most of our work online. We have very vibrant debates on our listservs. And our members join working groups of the GNSO and other types, drafting teams and other types of groups that are engaged in the policy process. And generally speaking, as I say, we are articulating a viewpoint which is a bit different from most of the other viewpoints in the GNSO. By and large, the GNSO is very business-oriented. It's three-quarters of it is the contracted parties, the suppliers in the industry, and another quarter of it is the corporate users. So we are we're in an interesting position, being one quarter of the GNSO arguing for non-commercial uses, the preservation of public spaces and non-commercial spaces and uses on the internet. For people who work in different types of NGO environments globally, whether it's gender issues or information technology issues, peace issues, development issues, human rights issues, things like that. we had, just to give you an example of some of the kinds of activities we engage in, just prior to this ICANN meeting, we participated very actively in the first African Internet Governance School that was held here in Durban from Thursday to Friday of last week. We had, I think it might have been about eight NCUC members were on the faculty teaching sessions on different aspects of global Internet governance. And we ran workshop on the last day about the experience of NCUC and the representation of civil society within the GNSO and the challenges thereof, which a lot of the African participants seem to have found very useful, and a number of them said that after that discussion that they were going to try to come and engage with us more here at this ICANN meeting, so I'm hopeful that that will happen. So that was a very useful event. We also sponsored a reception. We like to have a good time as well. I've handed out two pieces of paper to further illustrate some of our activities. So as I say, starting at 9 o'clock, we have Constituency Day, which is at each ICANN meeting, all the constituencies have a chunk of time to do their internal dialogues on different issues. And we will be having some discussions just after this session, both about some of our internal administrative matters, but then we will quickly move on and have three main substantive discussions. We will be having a discussion of African perspectives on internet governance that will be facilitated by Henriette Esterhuizen. Henriette is South African, and she's the executive director of the Association for Progressive Communications, which is a very large NGO network comprising, I think, 50-something organizations around the world, and they are a member of the NCUC as well. So we'll talk about African views on internet governance. We'll also have a half an hour with the ATRT review team, and we'll have a half hour visit from two vice chairs of the GAC. So that will be, I think, a quite interesting discussion. The other piece of paper I handed out to you pertains to the workshop we'll do tomorrow. This is a workshop I organized on the topic of closed generic TLDs. You may know that there's been quite a lot of controversy around the notion of having top-level domains like .book or .amazon, .patagonia, .cloud, so on, that would be essentially closed to external registrants and controlled completely by the applicant. This has been a major controversy within ICANN. It raises, I think, a lot of very interesting issues about how do you balance, on the one hand, the desire to foster new and innovative business models, and on the other hand, how do you preserve social, political, cultural, and other kinds of interests, particularly when many times it happens that the kinds of decisions that are being made in ICANN, and particularly in the GNSO, are ones that people outside the organization are not aware of. And so there was quite a controversy when, after there was the initial decision through the applicant guidebook to allow these closed generic name applications to go forward, a lot of people around the world, and you saw press articles and so governments getting excited in the International Telecommunication Union and so on, started to say, hold on, wait a minute, we're going to have one organization that controls .book We're going to have one organization that controls that hotel and doesn't let anybody else register. Some people raise questions as to whether it's a good idea. So we're going to have a very interesting, I think, debate tomorrow with representatives of various constituencies and stakeholder groups that hold different views on that matter. NCUC does not have a singular view on that matter, and this is not uncommon for us. Sometimes on divisive issues, our members are all very strong-minded and articulate and have their own views about what's in the public interest, and sometimes we don't necessarily come to a singular viewpoint on something. And on this topic, we were very much divided, and I think we remain so. So our interest in holding the discussion was not to advocate a particular position or to carry water for a particular corporate faction, but rather simply to broach for broader public discussion a matter of great, I think, public interest importance for ICANN. So that's the kind of stuff that we participate in. We're here at all of the ICANN meetings. We have our people who are participating in elections between NPOC and NCUC. We elect six members of the GNSO Council to represent the non-commercial stakeholder group. They participate directly in the policy process. We support them and engage in discussions with them on an ongoing basis. And lastly, I guess I should say, because this has come up when I've spoken to fellows prior, sometimes people ask, well, what's the difference between NCUC, NCSG, NPOC, and ALAC? Because I know that there's a lot of orientation towards ALAC in the fellows program. So, as you know, ALAC is an advisory group, so they have a different status from an SO. GNSO is actually directly involved in making policy. So that's one difference, is that ALAC is advisory and the GNSO is policy, directly engaged in the policy process. Secondly, ALAC's remit is across the entire breadth of ICANN issues, so they have an interest in all matters ICANN, from purely organizational to what happens in the CCNSO or the ASO or so on. We are focused on the GNSO in particular. We're focused on generic top-level domains. And thirdly, I guess a difference would be individuals can join NCUC. Individuals can be part of at-large, and I'm active in at-large as well. I'm involved in both sides. I've been for 5 years a member of the board of directors of the European at-large organization. But at-large, when it comes to voting on matters, is an aggregation of ALS structures, and so that's different. You, individuals don't quite fit in the same way there. And I guess lastly, I would say we, NCUC and ALAC, we have a little bit of an interesting history. Sometimes we agree on issues and sometimes we don't. Generally speaking, NCUC has been much more hardline in its focus on human rights and civil liberties, whereas ALAC has, the at-large, and, well, particularly the ALAC, I should say, has tended towards more of a consumer protection orientation. So, for example, on matters like WHOIS, we favored privacy protection for registrants and WHOIS, and they favored a more open WHOIS that's consistent with what the intellectual property interests and the law enforcement agencies want. Similarly, we've had differences on a number of different issues, but we often agree as well. So we cooperate as much as we can, and indeed we'll have a meeting with them tomorrow about some areas of common concern. So, okay, I will stop there and take any questions, and then, as I say, because I have to run a meeting at 9 o'clock, I'll leave at 5:02, and maybe my two colleagues who are here will say a little bit more about NCSG and so on as well. So any questions on NCUC particularly?
And I'll take a minute to point out, Bill has made some important statements here that I have missed. One thing that he's done for you is provided an agenda. And it reminded me to say that in Constituency Day, one of the best things you can do is to read the agenda for each of the community groups.
Yes.
And now he's really provided you with this information and said, you know, here's what we're going to discuss today. Is this something you want to get engaged in and discuss? Okay, so look on the website, open up each of the different constituency groups and see what they're discussing. Number two, you can be into houses, for the lack of a better word, and I really appreciate you just brought that up. If you have that multitasking ability, and I think we should all grow into it, but you don't have to stay in one place or the other. You can have a foot in each as you grow up in this corporation.
So don't feel like just because you have decided to start your path one way that you can't change. Many individuals, and I can, have changed where they live for a period of time, depending on what's happening in their professional life or their views or something. So, or kind of gone what Bill's doing is a little bit in each one. And I really appreciate you saying that as well. Tomorrow, the not-for-profit
operations
constituency will be here to speak. And so that is the second community or stakeholder group within the non-commercial
constituency
inside the non-commercial stakeholder group.
The language I can could be a killer.
It can. And because Bill was throwing out the acronyms left and right, reminded me in the newcomer presentation of yesterday, in the fellowship slide deck I sent out again yesterday, is the link for the acronyms. So bring it up when you're in the community sessions today. Have it ready so that when those acronyms are thrown around, you don't get lost. Just click onto that. Have it at the ready. When you hear it, you can right away take a look. Or again, hit that person next to you and say, what did he or she just say?
Thank you very much. Yes, absolutely. And again, feel free to look around our new website. There's videos of past meetings. We organize a lot of policy conferences on different topics. We're beginning to pull onto the new website some of our policy statements over the past decade, and there's a lot of other stuff on there. You can see who the members are and so on. It's all there at ncuc.org. Okay, so questions. Yes, please. Which way am I looking?
Okay, I'm Patricia Sango from Senegal.
Hi,
I'm a fellow, first-time fellow, and I'm also a NCUC, I'm a brand new NCUC member. And I couldn't, attend the African School of Internet Governance, but I would come to the meeting. I'm
starting
at 9, and can I just have a brief overview of what the subjects, the covered subjects were?
During the African Summer School?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a summer school. It's a winter school, I suppose. We covered a lot of things. You could look at the website. Just Google African School on Internet Governance. I don't remember the exact URL, but it's linked also off of our webpage. We covered names, numbers, broader Internet governance issues, linkages between Internet governance and development, issues of particular concern to Africa, the problems, as I say, and challenges of representing civil society within the ICANN structure, a number of different issues. We had, it was a 3-day program, so we covered a lot of stuff. And people seemed to love it. It was very interactive and very vibrant discussions and very cheerful. So, yeah. Okay.
Hello. Adrian Quesada from Costa Rica.
Hi.
Well, I have two questions. One thing that I'm not really sure, and going by the there is no stupid questions motto, what's the difference between the NCUC and the at-large communities? Or is it like the...
Well, again, as I said, one is part of an SO, one is an AC, so they play different roles within the ICANN structure vis-à-vis decision-making.
Okay.
Secondly, one is broad across the whole of ICANN, one is a part of a particular policy process around generic TLDs. Mm-hmm. One, NCUC takes individual members, ALAC, you can be part of at large, but to actually participate in a voting capacity, you have to be part of an at large structure, so that's a different thing. As I say, politically, I think we've tended to be, I search for the right word. I guess we would see ourselves as being more on the progressive end of the civil society. Oh, I should also point out that ALAC is not just civil society. At large also has business people. So at large is open to all users, so that means there are a lot of people who are private sector users, small business people, and so on, who share the values of at large, so that's great. But we are strictly non-commercial, so people who are in business really wouldn't generally come to us.
The second question, it's related basically to my context. Once again, I'm a lawyer. That happens even in the worst families. But what I'm used to, or my point of view, is really
connected to your group. So I find most of the issues that your group examines to be very close to me. But I'm looking at the registry form, and it says something like that I'm an individual user who is not represented by another group. So I was wondering, if I were to join your group, would I be excluding from participating in another group?
As Janice said, no, not so much. But, you know, you can't, when it comes to things like voting, for example, you couldn't, within the GNSO, be part voting. You couldn't be active in the registry constituency and voting for the registries and also active in NCSG and voting for non-commercial users, too. Okay. That would be a conflict, right?
Thank you very much.
Sure.
And, Bill, thank you so much, because I'm watching time for you and time for
that.
The...
I can take one more question.
Well, the Government Advisory Committee, I know, is trying to move in. So let's take one more question, and then we're going to quickly go out.
Okay.
There was a question right over here. Please.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is Kivuva Mwendwa from Kenya. I'm a fellow. I happen to have participated in the African government school where Bill was presenting. I want to know how you are able to balance between the different hats you wear when you are either at NCUC and ALAC. If ALAC is trying to push a certain agenda, which is divergent to NCUC, how are you able to balance your stand? Thank you.
Okay. Well, generally speaking, how I balance is through a lot of coffee. But beyond that, I guess, you know, for me, my home is more NCUC. I'm a member of the board of the European at large group, but that doesn't mean that the ALAC is separate from the at large structures generally, right? And so I think the European at large organization and its views tend to be more similar to mine, but sometimes when those go into negotiating with the other interests that are represented in the ALAC, they don't always prevail. It's like that. Okay. So, but I mean, it's possible to balance both, and it's possible to have healthy, honest disagreements of viewpoint with people that you respect and like, but just have a different orientation and work with them. And I continue to do so. So, again, you're all welcome to come to our meeting next door, should you be interested. I'm going to clear out, and you say the GAC is coming. I don't know if Magali, did you want Magali to say a word quickly? Magali is one of our representatives. She's a member of the GNSO Council. She's from Brazil, and a human rights person and so on, and she is actively engaged in the policy process, representing both NCUC and NPOC in the NC. As an NCSG counselor in the GNSO. Acronyms. And Rafiq Damak is a member, also longstanding member of NCUC. He's our representative on the NAMCOM. He's from Tunisia but lives in Japan. We are all complicated. I'm American and I live in Switzerland. Don't ask. So we all have complex identities. So, and he's a member of our executive committee also.
Perfect. Thank you very much for that quick introduction. And we are going to please take everything with you in front of you to make a clean place for the Government Advisory Committee to be able to walk into. For my friends of the Government Advisory Committee, we have some coffee that left over from our group. So if you need anything to get started, please go back to the right. Fellows, back to the back of the room, please, as you exit. We're going to have you just sign off on your shirts quietly. And come to the ICANN booth if you have any questions about how to structure your day. Do not wander. Come find us. Let's get your day structured. Have a good one.